Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Let's find out more from Jason Lloyd, who is a star here at 92.3 The Fan. And he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. Hey, Jace, how are you?
What's going on, guys?
Jason, star.
You
who
are.
Knew?
Thanks for
joining. Who knew?
Oh, is he? You're a superstar. Are you kidding? He's not regular star. Yeah. He's superstar. Yeah.
Didn't know. Now I know. I'm much more
I didn't
informed
know
today. Nice job.
Jace, a couple things. First, let's start with the NBA from last week. Just what did they get out of that meeting on Friday, and what did we learn about the NBA?
I mean, the thing that actually shocked me the most was Michelle Roberts' comments. I was stunned that she would say something to the effect of, it would feel like a prison to put these guys in a Vegas hotel and to make them finish out the season, and are you going to line armed guards around the door to make sure they don't get out? I almost stopped reading at that point because I can't take seriously anything else that she would say on the matter. And are we at the point of being able to play right now? No. No, we're not. And Adam Silver even said that. But here's the interesting thing to me. Here's what to keep in mind. Starting Friday, NBA players are going to start losing money. They haven't lost any money to this point. Friday, they're going to start losing money. So we'll see how eager they are to get back after Friday. I think it's a 25% cut that they start taking. And basically, it's going to go into like an escrow account. And if the season does not resume, if it's over, then they lose that money. If they can finish out the regular season, they'll get that money back. So it's driven by money. Obviously, every decision is driven by money. It felt to me like baseball has been the most aggressive in coming back. And here's the curious thing to me about all of this is baseball seems to be leaning toward returning to home parks, and basketball is talking about trying to keep everyone secluded to one area to limit travel to, like, you know, Orlando or LA or whatever else. So it's just interesting to me. The way that the different sports are going about this and the different approaches that they're taking, I've felt from the beginning baseball has been the most aggressive in trying to get back. I do think basketball will return. I do, but I don't understand why you would go back to the regular season. I don't understand. What is the incentive for someone like Tristan Thompson to come back and play when he's going to be a free agent this summer? Why would you come back and risk injury when they're not going to be in great shape? You know, look how long they've been off. They're not going to be in basketball shape. Why would you risk injury to come back for 5 or 10 meaningless games? And if you're Kevin Love and, you know, you could be traded this summer, again, why would you risk it? And that's just two Cavs guys. And, you know, Steve Kerr came out before and said, if we already feel like we're in off-season mode. For these teams that are out of it, like the Cavs and the Warriors and whoever else that have no chance of, obviously, the playoffs, I don't understand why you would drag them back to play a regular season. Give them a 2-week training camp, go right to the playoffs, and start the playoffs. And, you know, for guys at the top end who are competing for championships, this is a really big deal. Obviously, they want to come back and play. But for teams that are out of it, I just don't understand the incentive to bring them back.
Jason, do you think Michelle Roberts is telling the guys that she represents in the Players Association that, hey, this is not a good thing for you? Because if, in fact, they, you know, put them all in one place and she makes the jokes about the security and all that stuff, even though they're probably not jokes, do you think they're that closed-minded about the idea of returning to the season and thinking, hey, this is typical NBA where we're getting on our great charter flights and having our great food and our great hotels and everything's back to normal? I mean, to get this done, everybody's going to have to make some compromises on just about everything, aren't they? And I would think she would have to translate that to the players.
Yeah, there's some sacrifices, no doubt. And maybe it does mean being sequestered in a hotel for a month or 6 weeks. And ultimately, is it really that big of a deal for a month? Is it really that much if you're talking a month or six? Now, if it's more than that, if you're getting into 2 and 3 months and you're trying to have a normal postseason, you're trying to finish the regular season and you know, you're talking about a 90-day, okay, I get that. And I understand the complication, excuse me, from the fact that, like, these guys have normal lives. And, you know, I know in baseball there was a lot of players' wives that are due to give birth this summer. And, you know, that to me is a little bit different. If you're talking about quarantining baseball players for 6 months, that's a little bit different to me than 6 weeks or 2 months or whatever it is. So, yeah, of course there's going to be sacrifices that have to be made. But, again, it's going to come back to the money. And nobody's lost a dollar yet. That's going to change on Friday. And these guys, I know from covering the league, and, Jeff, I know you know this too, these guys can't save money when they expect to lose it, when they're preparing for a work stoppage, when a labor agreement's coming up and the veterans are telling them for 6 months or a year, you need to put your money away, you need to be smart with your money. They can't do it then, and they run out of money. Nobody saw this coming. So if they have to start losing money now, I just think the tone of a lot of players, guys who, and there are some very valid reasons for wanting to be very, very careful with this. I'm not trying to dispute that or dismiss that. You know, Larry Nance Jr. has ulcerative colitis. So that's a huge health risk for him in this. And Joe Ingles with some of the health issues of his family. These are real life issues that you have to tackle and you have to debate. But for the vast majority of players, I think that there's a compromise here that can be made in bringing guys back. And we'll see. We'll see what happens when the checks start getting a little bit lighter at the end of this week and into the future, if that sort of incentivizes them to come back and try and figure something out.
Is that 70-game guarantee to the regionals a factor in anything as far as trying to get a little bit of the regular season back in? I mean, we talk about it, but is this mythical, or is this – and I'm not saying mythical as far as it probably being true on the contract, but, I mean, is it something that creates a brick wall or creates a barrier to say, hey, we got to get the regular season done before we can go to the playoffs?
Yeah, I missed the first thing you said. What was the first thing you said? You're breaking
The notion that they have to play 70 games in the regular season to fulfill their regional sports contracts to try to get those games. And does that create a obstacle as far as, you know, making sure that they have to get the regular season in before they get to the playoffs?
I don't know the regional TV contracts well, and I don't want to pretend that I do.
Okay.
So I don't know. I've heard that too, but I don't know the magic number on that. I just know that the money that they're losing now, they will only get back if they complete the entire season. If they complete the 82-game season, they'll get that money back. And if they don't, then they're going to lose a portion of, you know, depending on how many games that they don't miss, they'll lose a percentage of that money. So I don't know. I don't want to speak to the TV contract side of it because I just don't know that as well.
Yeah, I guess the question is, do you feel like they've got to get the regular season done before they can go on to the playoffs? And I don't think so.
I think we're far enough in. We know. It sucks for, you know, a 9 seed that's maybe a game out of the playoffs or something like that, or a team that, what is it, Portland, that's just on the edge and, you know, maybe over the end of the regular season with a decent push could have made it in. But if it's me, I go right to the playoffs, right from here. You're not going to mess around. If you're trying to get this done in a timely order, if you're trying to minimize contact and risk and everything else, let's just go right to the season. Give them 2 weeks to train and ramp up, 3 weeks, and we go and we play and we start the playoffs and we crown a champion. And it's weird, and if they do that, the champion I'm sure is going to have an asterisk by it, like, you know, in shortened seasons and whenever else, where, you know, critics will look and say, yeah, they won, but, you know, look at all the – but so what? It's still a champion. It's still the NBA playoffs. That, to me, ultimately, I think is the way to go. Like I said, for some of these teams that are completely out of it, I just don't see the incentive for making them come back and play 5 or 10 games and send them on their way again. I would go right to the playoffs.
Jason, is there a time frame in your head where if you get to so-and-so and you haven't been able to start it up again, you just say, all right, fellas, sorry, this season's done. And now we're looking for next season?
Yes, but I don't think we're anywhere near that point. I think they can stretch this out really to the end of August. if they wanted to. I think we've got all summer here. I've thought, personally, the NBA season should start on Christmas Day. I've always thought that. I went round and round with David Stern about that one night in Denver, coming off the lockout year, when they started late in December. That, to me, sounds like a more – why are you going up head-to-head with the NFL that you can't win in October and November when no one's paying attention to the NBA and even December, when no one's really paying attention to the NBA until Christmas Day anyway? Start your season on Christmas Day with the same monster matchup that, you know, you always enjoy on Christmas Day, especially now that the NFL is trying to move in on your turf with Christmas Day and having these Christmas Day games. To me, I would start the season then. So I don't think – I think we have plenty of time still. Now, it's going to feel like a whole new season. You know, by the time if best case scenario, these guys get back out on the floor and it's July, it's going to feel, you know, we stopped in March, April, May, June, July, 4 months. You know, that's how long an off season is. But by the time you crown a champion in mid-June, July, August, September, the season starts again in October. So it already feels like it's going to be a new season, at least I think. But I think we have plenty of time before we have to blow the whistle and say, okay, this is done, this is over, no champion, we're going to try again next year. I think that they can stretch this out really all the way to the end of August if they want to.
You don't think there's an asterisk on who wins the season this year, if somebody wins a championship? A championship's a championship. That's the way I see it. What do you think?
I totally agree.
When Shaq comes out and says this, I'm just like, what?
Well, no. I mean, who won it the year? Was it LeBron? Did the Heat win the year of the lockout? I can't remember now.
I do believe that's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think that's true.
So some people are like, I've absolutely heard. You've never heard? I've absolutely heard. Well, it was a shortened season. It was a strike-shortened season. To me, it's a championship. It counts just as much as the rest.
Sure.
You still have to get through all these great teams to do it. You win it, it counts. But absolutely, it comes with a yeah, but in a lot of people's minds.
Jason Lloyd's joining us. Jason, the Jordan documentary that's been out, I think, has opened up the minds of a lot of folks who really didn't get a chance to see him in his prime. And it's weird to think that there are, you know, huge chunks of the basketball fan base that didn't get to see him, but that's the reality of time. What have your thoughts been of the documentary and the way that Jordan has been portrayed and maybe the way it portrays the league as it stands now?
I've enjoyed it. I every Sunday night, my kids know, my wife knows, I'm going to the basement, I'm closing the door, leave me alone. These are my 2 hours this week to watch this. Because I lived through similar with LeBron and the Cavs, so much of it resonates with me of, oh, my God, yes, they went through that. Yes, they went through that. Yes, they went through that. And the way that in terms of how he's portrayed, you know, I talked to Wayne Embry last week about it, and Wayne really does not appreciate the way that they're treating Jerry Krause and the way that they're really kind of dragging Krause throughout this whole thing without giving the guy a chance to defend himself. It's obvious, you know, if you upset Michael Jordan, you're going to be on his you-know-what list for the rest of your life and beyond. And I don't think it's not just Wayne. You know, I think a lot of people that really hasn't set well with. And, you know, Wayne was talking about what an innovator Jerry was and how terrific he was at his job and his scouting techniques that really nobody else used at that time. And his relationship with like Division II and Division III coaches and HBCU coaches and how that really is part of why he wanted to move up and draft Scottie Pippen, is because he knew more about Pippen than most, just from those relationships that not a lot of other GMs had with some of those schools in the 80s. And so the thing that I keep thinking watching this, you know, the greatest of all time debate, and LeBron to me was bigger, stronger, faster than Michael. He's a better passer. He's a better rebounder. But Michael was still Michael, and he was still – there's just something about him. And the difference between them, LeBron still wants to be loved and appreciated by everybody. He wants you to like him at his core. He wants you to like him. Michael didn't care if you like him or not. And I don't know if that's the difference. It was striking to me when Michael was talking about leadership last night at the end of 7 about the way that he led, and it's different than the way LeBron would lead.
Yeah.
And where they're similar was LeBron was like LeBron was most comfortable in the uncomfortable. He would screw things up just to make everybody else uncomfortable, just to see how they would react. And Griff used to say that all the time. LeBron is the most comfortable in uncomfortable situations. So in terms of that, they had that in common. But just the way that they go about needing to feel love and needing to be embraced and needing to be liked, Michael didn't care, and LeBron did, very much so. So it's just been – I've had a lot of fun watching it. I really enjoyed it. And it's just been I'm sad it's ending next week.
But I got a ton of questions. First of all, what did Wayne say about – and I'm sure you – I don't know if you asked him or not, but I'm assuming that you did. What did Wayne say about Ron Harper's comment about he wishes that Lenny would have told him that he was going to guard Jordan on the shot?
He didn't want to get very much into the Harper stuff with me on the record.
Okay.
But he very much likes Ron, respects him, and they have a good relationship to this day. They have a very good relationship. But he didn't really want to, because we're actually doing a story. I'm doing a story this week. All week long we're doing this What If series. And one of the stories that I'm doing is What If Michael Missed? And I talked to Wayne at length about that. Would he still be traded? Would they have traded him? If Michael missed that shot, the Cavs could have gone to the finals that year. You know, the way that they handled the Knicks, the way that they went 3-3 with the Pistons that year in the conference finals. So they easily could have gone. That team could have gone to the NBA finals. And then if that team makes the finals, is Ron still traded? And there's a lot of ambiguity around that, I guess is the best word. And Wayne said, that's a good question. He couldn't say for sure one way or the other if Ron still would have been traded. But I enjoyed I love talking to Wayne. He's one of my favorite people in the league. I love when the Raptors come through because he comes on every trip to see his old pals in Cleveland. And it's a fascinating thing to think about.
The other point about the series and LeBron is, to me, Jason, I'm just curious your thoughts on this, that I almost see that everything that we've seen in this documentary provided a manual for LeBron in situations that he would be able to go back to. Like, all the situations I see here, LeBron has been in there or been in those kind of situations on how to handle things and not or take things in a different direction. Do you see it that way, too? That he learned a lot from Jordan, not about basketball, but about a lot of things, almost like – going back to the fact that his agent decided that he was going to use a golf guy to market Jordan, so he could be an individual, so he could be bigger than the team and be able to do it. I see a lot of that, things that LeBron really could have learned from and may have learned from Jordan.
See, I go the other way with it. I don't think that they're that similar because Michael was obsessed with winning and LeBron was obsessed with business for quite a few years. And once Michael won, once Kobe won, once they got championships, then they kind of pivoted into more of the business world. LeBron was business from day one in the way that he restructured contracts and the companies that he started. He was worried about business and endorsements and money from day one. And I didn't feel like Michael and Kobe kind of operated that way. And I'll go another way with it. The way that LeBron will always make the right basketball play. He's been crushed for it so many times in his career, for passing to Damon Jones or passing to Danielle Marshall. Very, very rarely in this entire documentary, I think we saw him. They touched on it briefly, how he started to trust Paxson and some other guys because Paxson made one big shot for him, and then Kerr made the big shot for him, made the big three in the finals for him, and Kerr joked about it. I had to come bail Michael out again, ha ha ha. But for the most part, it was Michael take the ball and get the hell out of his way. And that was the only time I can remember that with LeBron was Chicago, but with the black play when he scratched the play and said, "Give me the ball and get out of the way." But short of that, LeBron is very much a, "You're going to play with me. We're going to do this together." And with Michael, it's they're terrified of him. And I just don't think that Cavs players or Heat players or Lakers players quite feel that way about LeBron. I don't think they're scared of him quite the way that maybe Bulls teammates were scared of him.
We could talk to you all day about this. Jace, thank you. Appreciate it. Always love listening to you. We always love reading your stuff. So, and just kind of talk about one more time what you have coming up with the Wayne Embry stuff.
Oh, it's just a what if. It's a whole what if series. Meisel and I today did one on what if it didn't rain on the Indians in 2016, the World Series, how that could have gone differently. I'm actually supposed to talk to a couple of the old Cavs players, I think, this afternoon for the what if. What if Michael missed? How would the Cavs look differently in the 80s if Michael missed that shot? I think it runs Wednesday. I don't know. Sometime later this week. I don't know the schedule.
All right. You're the man. We appreciate it. We love listening to you on the radio, too. Thanks, Jace.
Thank you, Jason.
Thanks, guys.
Jason Lloyd, pride of Northeast Ohio. Of course, you can hear him on 92.3 The Fan, and probably one of the best writers around.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.